I'm on a mission to help high flyers just like yourself, who until now have let the fear of public speaking hold them back from making a bigger impact. Join me as I find out the secret sauce from the world's leading speakers to make your speeches more interesting, enjoyable to give, and impactful for your audience. That's the mission, and this podcast will get you there. My name's Victor Ahipeni, and this is the Public Speaking Secrets Podcast.
Speaker Nation, what's happening? Welcome to another episode of Public Speaking Secrets. I'm your host, Victor Ahipeni, and make sure you've got your watch tied on tightly and your wallet zipped up in your pocket, because I've got Josh Norbido, the illusionist, which may seem a little bit different, but I guess all of our episodes don't necessarily follow the status quo. But I know you're going to learn a lot out of this, because I've seen Josh perform, educate, and entertain myself, and I can tell you what he does, he's very, very good at. And I'm sure you're all going to get a ton of value. So with that being said, welcome to the show, Josh.
Victor, thanks for having me. And I'm glad, you know, it'd be hard to jump through the podcast and steal people's watches, but one day, one day that would be the best trick ever.
Yeah. But tell us, I don't like delving into the background too much, but I guess with this, it's not, you know, you haven't turned into a motivational speaker or had a life-changing accident or anything like that. But how did you, I guess, first become an illusionist, and then how's that journey kind of shaped to what you're doing day to day now?
Good question. So it really began with, you know, when it comes to magic, every child has an interest in magic, right? Whether it's watching it or getting given a magic set when they're young. So when I was about 10, classic Christmas present, I was given a magic set, and I found it fascinating, and that I knew how to do this thing that the people watching didn't know how to do, and they would react to it. So basically what I did then is I took this magic set to my school during the school lunch, I just went to the library and proceeded to take out one trick after another and performed this impromptu show at school. And it was probably terrible, but I remember everyone staying and watching it. So that was like my first memory of magic. And I always remembered one card trick from that magic set, which surprisingly was actually really good. I didn't understand how good it was back then, but I carried it with me in my arsenal as I grew up. So I forgot everything else that I learned from it. But whenever I was at like a house party or something, I could pull out this one like mind-blowing thing. So I carried that with me. When I finished school, I actually ended up getting into sales. So I hadn't yet thought of anything to do with this magic stuff. So I got into sales and I became a sales manager. At that time, it was for a fitness club. So like anyone who's in sales, no matter what the industry is, the skills still apply pretty much the same, like whether you're prospecting for new people to join the gym or to buy your product, it's all kind of the same. So I learned these skills, but I started to dive more into magic as a hobby. And it wasn't long until I started combining the two. So I started performing magic at work to break the ice before I would have a meeting with someone. And it got their attention and it got people engaged, but I at that time didn't realize the power I had created. So I just got carried away and I just ended up doing lots of magic basically. And I would get in trouble for practicing, you know, playing with my cards and stuff in the office. And
so you're gonna say practicing witchcraft, got in trouble.
Yeah, witchcraft. That's right. Yeah. The phone, I'm meant to be on the phone making calls, but it's levitating, you know. So normal sort of magician problems. But So stuff was happening then, but I didn't really know what was going on. I just sort of, it just started clashing because I had this big hobby, but I had to have this day job. And it wasn't until I ended up working for a big printing company that sold big industrial printers to big corporate offices, where it's a really cutthroat sales industry where no one is interested in getting a door knocker come to their business to sell them a printer because they already have one. So this was the first time that I realized I could use magic as a tool to engage with businesses. So I created this specific illusion that looked like I was printing my business card from my phone. Yeah. And I would do that at the reception desk, and that would actually give me an in to be able to chat with them, because it doesn't mean we have the best printers, but I came across as the most unique at the time. So I started, and so that's when I really delve into, hey, I can use this tool, this performance tool, as a way to engage in business. And then I started looking at it the other way, and I started realizing that all of these skills in business I was learning are quite similar to the skills I was using in the world of magic and performing, but they're looked at totally different because one's theater and one's business. And over time, what's happened is I've started to discover the common threads between the two and how theater can actually benefit from looking at how people sell in business, and people in business can learn how people perform in theater, or how magicians will perform an effect to use it to enhance their world, basically. So because I was in sales for so long and because I love magic so much, it made sense just to really dive into it. And that's when this keynote that I'm currently presenting, The Magic of Sales, was born.
That's brilliant. And I mean, that's the one that I've seen, and it's fundamentals. Like, it's great fundamentals into sales that, I mean, I think probably because I'm engulfed in this space a lot anyway, that I've heard, but the way that you deliver it and incorporate magic is something that allows it to be memorable, which I think is the huge power that you have. I'm not saying that, you know, everything that you teach is valuable, but the way that you teach it is what massively separates you, which is super cool, because, you know, we've all been in there where we've been preached to by somebody who's either giving us death by PowerPoint, they've done the presentation a million times and you can see they're dead inside. And it's just, you know, nobody wants to really be there. But you know, when you can come in, and it's kind of like that, you get angry because you're getting taught something and you're having fun. Like, you know, the kid's like, I'm not gonna enjoy this game because I know I'm learning something, you know, this Sesame training stuff teaching me numbers and letters and things like that. But I mean, that's what we want when we're getting out in the presenting world. Let me go back a second. So I mean, this will probably be handy for someone who's doing, you know, cold calling outreach and things like that, which is, you know, huge part of communication. But what do you think gave you the in with the illusion? Did they think that your phone was printing the card and they wanted to know more, or were they impressed that there was an illusion that got you there?
Yeah. Like, what were they actually thinking?
Yeah.
Yes. So look, I would get lots of different reactions. Well, as many three responses I would get from people when I would do that. And the reason I felt that I had to do it is because when I came in as a door-to-door salesperson, I look exactly the same as everyone else that comes in. And, you know, people put up their wall barriers straight away. They go into autopilot and they're ready to say no, thank you, goodbye.
Yep.
So it's really just came down to, I need to do something that they're not going to be used to seeing or having to interact with, that will force them to be in the moment with me. So luckily my power was magic, but you know, you could be a singer or a dancer if you really wanted to, you know, freak people out in a different way. But when I would perform it, yeah. So most people would, their eyes would go wide and they would freak out, either because they thought that I really do have the technology to pull a business card out of a phone and print it, or they realized, oh my God, magic just happened. And then there's probably about 10% that just have no souls, and they just were so engulfed in how much they hate their work that they just like were completely glazed and didn't respond. But that was a very small percent. But either way, yeah, for the majority, 90%, it would get a positive response. You know, some people would call their colleagues to come and watch it again. Some people would actually get their boss because they want their boss to see it, which is the most amazing thing that could ever happen. But, you know, it was always positive. And it was just fun.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's the big thing, is getting past that gatekeeper. Like, if the gatekeeper's giving you a raving review, like, hey, boss, boss, you gotta see this. This is ridiculous. You've got to see this.
Exactly.
All of a sudden, like, it's the quickest, you know, not necessarily rapport that they want to work with you, but then, yeah, you can, yeah, at least it's one step closer to landing that job. So let's fast forward to what you're doing today. So I want to kind of break down for the audience a couple of things. First off, how did you go about fine-tuning your keynote presentation? Was it something you've worked on and then it's kind of been smooth sailing, or have you found what stuck or what didn't stick? Was it feedback from the audience? I'm throwing a lot of questions at you. Hopefully you can just free flow off this, but was it like, I've got this trick, how can I make a sales fundamental fit, or I've got the sales fundamental that I want to teach, how can I make an illusion that's going to tie in with it?
Yeah, look, that's it's a very wide open question. So let me know if I'm going on with this too much, because I love this question. So look, the very beginning, like how this keynote came about, because it's hard to just
a way better question. Just how did this keynote
So the way that a magician ended up doing this keynote for companies and CEOs and stuff, like when I look at it now, like I just had an inquiry today for this conference, and they're like, you know, there'll be CEOs and managers and stuff here to learn from you about sales. And I'm like, that's ridiculous that I'm a magician in this position that I've been given to share this knowledge, I'm so fortunate. But the way it started was from a business sense. So when I first started pursuing magic as a full-time career, at the time I was looking at it like a business, because luckily I'd come from sales. So I started, you know, how can I prospect to get more people to want me to do shows for them? You know, how can I get clients to want to work with me again? All those kind of things. Yeah. And at one point I had to look at my calendar and be like, you know, I'm getting quite busy as a performer, but how can I fit in more shows? Because at the moment, typically a magician will be booked on a weekend, like a Friday night, Saturday night, maybe Sunday if you're booked for a wedding, but that leaves a very big calendar of days open during the week. So what I really did was I sat down and I said, okay, where are people during the week? Monday to Thursday or Friday during the day, where are people? And it was, the simple answer was, they're at work. So the next question for me was, well, how can I make it relevant for someone to want to bring me into their workplace to do magic? Like, how can I make that make sense for them?
Yep.
So originally, it came to me as I should do like a team building show. So I just perform magic that's really easy that they can learn and they can write it off as tax deductible, and it makes sense to bring someone in to do that. So originally I created this show that was, it was a team building show, and it was designed for little offices of like, you know, 10 to 20 people.
Yep.
And back then there was no sales content. It was just, there's a few little lines that I would throw in there, but it was mainly just easy things they could learn. And the more I started to do those, I started to add in slowly more and more actual business principles that I would tie in with a few little effects. And it started building, people would talk about it and I would get booked for more and more of them. And slowly the audience size would get bigger. So now it'd be 30 people, then the next one would be 50, 80. And then one day, for this big fitness chain, they wanted me to speak for their quarterly launch. And it was like 120 people. And I was like, what the hell? I can't teach these small magic tricks. So it then jumped to becoming a presentation. It was only it was a 20-minute spot, and I had to fill it with magic and these sort of principles that they can apply. So it actually went pretty terribly, to be honest. The first one, like everything, like when you see someone speak on stage, you never, don't assume that they just walked on stage and could do that. There's such a process, as you would know yourself.
Yep.
So the first one, like I still have the footage of it, and like to the audience, it seemed fine because they saw lots of magic. But when I watch it back, what I was doing was I would try to start delivering this content, but then when I would forget, I would just jump straight into the next magic effect and like and just leave it. So it was really sort of it was a bit rusty, which is what new things start off like. So yes, I did that. But I loved it. I loved it that I was actually able to help people in some way, like give them some value as well as entertaining them. They're quite different feelings. When I do a keynote, it's a very, very different feeling to when I do just a normal entertaining stage show, but I love them both. So,
can I just jump in?
Yeah, jump in.
So from a psychology point, it was crap when you gave your first one, or it didn't go great from your point of view. What did the audience and the event organizer think of it?
So I got a great video recap from this event. Like if you watch the video and the actual guy who booked me, who was the head of, he was like the head of communications for this fitness chain. He gave me a raving review. Like he gave me a great testimonial. Like, so I suppose the level of speakers, like the general average of speaking in Australia, I don't think is that high. So from a performer's point of view, I thought it was very, very rough. But from his point of view, having seen lots of speakers, I suppose to him it was actually quite good, or a little above average.
And I think that the other thing there is for a lot of like aspiring public speakers is, even though you I've missed this or it wasn't as slick here, you're often the only one that knows that, or you are the only one that knows that, because you're the only one who's run through your presentation. So yeah, if there's still, like you say, knowledge and value from an education standpoint and the entertainment, people are still going to walk away fairly happy. It's just when you get to your next level of, you know, competency and towards expertise, it's like, oh, that was horrible. But I think it's probably a pretty good lesson in there that, yeah, you still got a raving review from it. So yeah, it can't have been necessarily as bad as what you did, but now that you know, it's you can always reflect and improve.
Absolutely. And you're absolutely right. People don't know, the audience doesn't know what information you're meant to deliver. So if you forget to say something, you'll hate yourself for it, but they have no idea. So you're absolutely right. They just getting what you're giving them on the day, not what you think you've planned. I think that is a really good point, and not to worry about it. And I should also say, when I did it on the day, I thought it was great. It's only now looking back in this video that I put so much time working into it that I can see, in fact, like how newbie I was back then. But yeah, I was just super passionate. So I'm glad I pushed through it anyway.
And I mean, that's the 80-20 rule. It's like you can get like 80% of your performance down, and it's that last 20% that you have to put like 80% of the effort in to make it slick and repeatable and, you know where it, yeah, because you got the comedy aspect, the education aspect, the, you know, everything in there that you want to make, you know when that funny line isn't actually that funny, when it doesn't hit, you're like, oh, better find something else. And then you know one that hits and you're like, okay, I better make sure I add that in after I do particular joke.
Oh, absolutely. And things you think will be funny are just not funny in real life. And things that you think are really important, the audience sometimes just don't care about it. Mm. Like I used to tell the business card story of me pulling the business card out of the phone. That used to be like a full 8-minute segment where I would really detailedly talk about that. But now it's like a 2-minute spot because people just don't need to hear an 8-minute story of how it happened. Yeah. But I thought it was like the groundbreaking moment of how I thought about being a speaker, but really, like, just do the magic. Boy, you know.
give us what we want.
That's right.
So I guess as it evolved and from there, I mean, I'm assuming.
Oh yes, yep.
Yeah. So jump into that, and then we'll jump into, I guess, the business aspect of what you do.
Absolutely. So yeah, so I did, at this point, I'd been doing it all myself. I'd done the team building shows myself, and found what I would do back then is I'd reach out to clients I'd done magic events for. Like I'd entertained them at events and said, hey, I have this new thing. Can I come and do it at your business for free so I can film it and get testimonials? Like every business who has a new product or service, you test it on your customers. So yeah, so I built this all up, and at this point I really had no idea what I was doing. It's just that I was really enjoying it, and I had got that first big audience. And I don't know if you've come across this speaker, Victor, but his name's Vin Yang. Does that ring a bell to you?
Yeah.
So Vin really pioneered, in Australia at least, the idea of a magician really diving into the speaking world and just soaring at it. If anyone has a chance to look him up, Vin Yang, V-I-N-H-G-I-A-N-G, he's great. So he basically is a magician and entrepreneur and now speaker. But the story with Vin and I is that I've been following him since many, many, many years ago when he was simply just a teenager on YouTube teaching magic tricks.
Yeah.
So I'd been following him and seen this whole journey of how he won Adelaide Entrepreneur of the Year, Young Entrepreneur of the Year, for building like his own how-to teaching magic websites and gained like 30,000 subscribers. Anyway, it's ridiculous, but I'd been following this guy's journey, seeing he's a speaker. I'd always reached out to him. And then one day he's like, dude, let's have a Skype session. So we have a Skype session. I'm like freaking out because he's like a celebrity to me at this point. And look, I explain. I'm like, look, straight up, I also love the idea of speaking as a magician, but I want to talk about sales, whereas he would talk more about personal growth and motivation. And when people approach Finn, he's always like, oh, that's a great idea. Yeah, here's a few steps you could do. But the one difference was I'd already gone to this length of physically going out and giving these sessions and getting them filmed and getting reviews. So I was able to show him. I was like, look, I'm already doing it. Here's a video. And he got really taken back. He was like, holy crap, you're already like halfway there already without me. Like, basically, like, I can see that you're serious.
Yeah, you've actually taken action. Whereas, yeah, I'm sure you've had it where you give people advice, oh, you should read this or do this or make sure you go and do such and such. And it's like, oh, that's great advice. Yeah, it is. But you got to take action on it. And yeah.
Yeah, it's like if someone says to you, hey, I think it would be cool to start a podcast. You know, how many times have you heard that? And you're like, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
But if someone's like, you know, I bought the equipment, I've already done 30 episodes, this and that, you're going to take it a bit more seriously now.
Yeah.
Their idea. So I brought that to him. And so then he decided to actually explain the formula of what I should do. And it was basically this: to find content, he said, go and get the three top sales books that are out at the moment. And read every chapter and try and come up with a magic effect that would act as a metaphor for that chapter, and do it for all three books. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you come, this is like, you know, 100 chapters in the end. And then what you do is you find the three strongest ones, and that becomes your content for your keynote. Mm-hmm. So that's, and he's like, if you can read those three books and do all of this and then fine tune it down to the three within 6 months, then I'll tell you the next step, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so I did it, and that really started to hone like the seriousness of it. Like, wow, I can actually give value, not just these little things that I think are fun because I can tie it in with the magic, but now I'm doing it the other way, where I'm finding the most valuable information and then finding magic that'll fit with it, rather than magic I love and finding something to use it for, if that makes sense.
Yep.
So yeah, so I started doing that, and so it started to evolve. It was still not great because now I'm trying to be a speaker and deliver this content, and I was starting to forget about the magic as much.
Yeah.
And so that got fixed pretty quickly because I would show my friends and they're like, dude, it's great, but it's super boring because like you did, you know, 10 minutes of magic and 50 minutes of talking. Yep. And you are a magician, so do what you love showing. So yeah, there's a big evolution of that. But eventually I found a good balance. But even though I say that, like in today's day, even though I'm speaking every month, it's still evolving every single time. Mm. Because I feel like a keynote should be a living organism that changes as you grow and as you learn more stuff. Not just because like if one audience liked it, just stick to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm always trying to refine it and make it better every time. So even to now, it's still evolving, but luckily it's at a point where people get, I hope, a lot of value from it, but they also get entertained. So they're not just listening to some guy tell them things that they could probably read in a book. I try to give them, you know, a different perspective and a fun way to remember it so that they might actually apply it a little bit differently the next time they think of what their voicemail should sound like, for example. Yeah. I think your voicemail should kind of be like how I show people my business card. It should shock them with something they've never heard before.
Yeah.
So today, so I'm still in touch with Vin, you know, this is years later now, but I'm still speaking, it's still evolving, but it's still the same concept of I love sales and business and I love magic. And I just want to share the two as much as I can.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. And I mean, having seen it in action, I can see, yeah, it, from seeing it and I guess, yeah, enjoying your talk and then also looking at it from the speaker side, I knew it was a well-polished machine that you don't accidentally just happen to know a bit about sales and know a bit about magic and then it all just comes together and is a wow. So I think a lot of people, I mean, you obviously don't have to be a magician to go through that kind of process. If you are a keynote presenter, it's if you've written your own book or you've got other people's books in your area, find out what the reoccurring themes are and then see how you can deliver that and tailor that and tie that into your stories or the journey of the customer or the people out there listening. But I want to delve in just quickly. Talk to us about how you find these, or how you, I guess, got your first couple of gigs. It sounded like you reached out to, how did you get those team building events? And then how did you, how have you managed to kind of scale it up and have a bit of a process? Man, there's some lightning going on outside.
Crazy.
Yeah. How have you managed to, yeah, keep getting leads, like
to build a speaking career?
Yeah.
Mm. So I had the benefit in the beginning of, like you said, when I had these team building shows that I wanted to put on, I'd reach out to other clients I'd worked with before. If I didn't have those clients, if I was someone starting brand new, I would simply start cold calling local businesses. I would do it that way.
Is that what you did for your team building stuff? Like to get those team building events, or was that through companies you already knew? Or
yeah, so with the team building ones, what I did was I keep all of my clients in a MailChimp database, so I can easily send out things like newsletters or emails to all of them to let them know what I'm up to, especially if I'm having a new show coming up and that kind of thing. So whenever I would do a magic event, I'd add their details to it so they can stay in the loop. So what I did back then was I sent out an email that went to all of them that said, I have this new thing, I'll do it for free, I just want this and this in return, like to film it and get a testimonial.
Yep.
So that's what I did in the beginning. But I was just saying, if I was a speaker that hadn't come from something else to have clients, I would have gone to a networking group or cold called businesses.
Yep.
It's just that I don't want to do that if I already have customers, because that's way too hard work if I don't have to.
Exactly, leverage off what you got.
Absolutely. So that's how I started. However, when you're trying to get keynotes where you're speaking at a conference of 300 plus people, they don't just want something because it's free, because there's way too much risk on them to have a bad speaker. So that was never going to work. For that, what I had to do was I had to build up a video that was good enough to show someone that I can do the job.
Yep.
So luckily, because I'd been filming all of these small team building shows along the way, and then I had that bigger one that I now don't think was very good, but back then it was he gave me a good testimonial and the footage was good. We were able to put together what looks like quite a good speaker reel.
Yep.
And because I had the I could show on my website all these other shows I'd done magic wise, they could see that I'm used to being a showman on stage. But it still made it quite tough. The thing that helped me was Vin gave me a very good piece of advice when it comes to working with speaker bureaus, because speaker bureaus at the end of the day are the people that client like conferences go to find speakers.
Yeah.
And a lot of the general rule is that you go and connect with all the speaker bureaus so they all have you on their minds. But what Vin said to me was, you'd rather be someone's golden nugget than everyone's spare change. So what Vin did from the very beginning was he worked with one bureau exclusively so that it became a business partnership. So he would give all of his inquiries to them, like they would get a cut from it because they would manage it. And then in return, they would find him clients as well. Because if you're listed with 30 different speaker bureaus, they all don't know you and you're not going to bring all of them work. So they just feel like they're giving you work basically.
Yeah.
And there's no incentive because they could just give that job to any speaker. So I really took that on board. So I met with a speaker bureau and I explained that situation. Look, I want to start building up this business. I'd love to do it with you. And if you have a client that is willing to let me speak for free, I'll have it filmed and everything like that. I promise they will not be disappointed, but at least that way we can get in the door with bigger conferences. So that's how I got my foot in the door for speaking at these bigger engagements, basically. Yeah. The Speaker Bureau did exactly what I'd done with the team building shows. They reached out to their clients, which of course are much bigger. And they found an association that was running a conference for business education. They needed a spot filled right after lunch, which is usually a really dull part of the day. And they basically sold me by saying, look, we have this speaker, but he's really entertaining. He will do a show while they're learning something. And that became the sort of format that was able to get me booked to a few of them, because there were a lot of speakers didn't want to be in that spot after lunch because it's just like a kill zone. But for me coming in, I could actually rile them up, get them excited, and a conference could put me anywhere in their slots, I guess. So that's how it started. And I guess at the end of the day, the other advice Vin gave me is to be so good that they can't ignore you. Mm. Meaning you can have the best promo video or website or whatever you like, but if the content itself is just really good, then people will refer you and they'll talk about you. So I suppose that's the other thing I've really done. It's I'm always evolving my show and working on it so that people will refer me and I can, you know, get more gigs basically. And so there's not too much to it other than that, apart from content. Like I'm always putting out content and vlogs of what I'm up to and where I'm speaking at, and just to stay on top of mind. But I really just try and deliver the best freaking experience I can for each audience. Yeah. And so far that's worked out. I always said that if magic didn't go well, I could just turn to crime. It's just that because they're pretty similar skill set. It's just that, you know, for now it's going well. So
yeah, for now you're getting paid. You're not stealing your pay.
Yeah, that's right.
Awesome. Well, I think that's a brilliant place to wrap it up, because it's been great being able to see your transition into how you created your keynote presentation, but also how you've been able to get your foot in the door, because so many people, what I love is that you're an action taker. And I think a lot of people are like, oh, why me? Yeah, I can't get into keynote presentations because they only want people who have done keynote presentations, and yeah, I'll never get there. And it's only the world's most famous people. But it's obviously not true. There's just got to be an element of hustle in there. There's got to be an element of creativity, an element of biting your ego if it's there, and saying, look, I'll do this for free because, yeah, if I do it well, it should lead to more stuff. If I don't, then I either have to perfect it or realize that it might not be, yeah, my avenue at the moment. And I think those are super valuable lessons. Like I think in what you've described with how you develop your keynote and how you've got it out there, that can trim, you know, weeks, months and years off people's trial and tribulations if they actually put it into action. So first off, if you're listening, put it into action if that's the avenue you want to go. And secondly, thanks heaps for that, Josh. Like it's been really insightful.
Oh, my pleasure. If I can leave one note of wisdom, I guess, that was passed on to me, was that when you said, you know, people just want to book the most famous speaker or the most, reputable speaker, it's not about being the best. Like if you're just competing to be the best speaker at your field, you'll always lose because you're competing with someone who's already in the game.
Yeah.
But rather, if you compete to be the most unique, then you will stand out amongst the rest. Even if it's the same content, your unique way of presenting it is what's going to get people's attention. I mean, like I said, CEOs will hire me to speak about sales and I'm a magician. I'm not a winning entrepreneur of the year. I do card tricks that make my living, you know? And so, and that's true with a lot of speakers. Vin, I was speaking about, does magic. There's a guy named Eric Wall, who's in the top like three speakers in the US, and he's a speed painter while talking about business. So people love it because they get to see all this art and stuff created in real time. And then obviously you've got people like Scott Stratton, who would just yell at you for an hour and people love it. So he's delivering similar content, but it's just so aggressive and it's like, it's an experience. So if you can just find your unique way of delivering your content, then you've got such a greater chance than just trying to sit there with a PowerPoint and read this information that might already be readily available somewhere else.
I'll let you in on a joke. I started a talk with many years ago, which was a horrible way to start it. But how do you catch a unique bird?
How?
You sneak up on it.
Wow.
But everybody, don't use that to start a talk. But do try and be unique. Josh, if people want to get in touch with you, find out more, follow your journey, or even book you to speak at their events, where can they go and what can they do?
Yeah, come and find me. I mean, on social media, it's at Josh Norbido, JOSHNORBIDO. My website is joshnorbido.com. Through my website, you can find my email. Definitely open to helping or giving advice to any future speakers or performers, or just want to connect on the socials, then hit me up for sure.
Cool. Well, we'll link all of that at publicspeakingblueprint.com, where we've got all the links to Josh, everything we've spoken about, and you can pick up my book, Public Speaking Secrets. You pay the shipping, I'll pay for the book, and we'll get it out to you to make you the speaker that you've always dreamed of. Awesome, Josh. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I look forward to catching up with you in person pretty soon.
Love it. Thanks, Victor, and thanks, everyone, for listening.
If you want to fast track your confidence and impact with public speaking, then be sure to jump over to publicspeakingblueprint.com, where there's an array of free resources to help you no matter where you are on your journey to becoming a more powerful speaker. And while you're at it, jump over to Facebook and join our free community called Speaker Nation, where there's a ton of other like-minded individuals just like yourself looking to level up. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you don't miss next week's episode.